Your home is your biggest investment. So don't waste money experimenting when it comes to building, maintaining, or repairing it. From the chimney and the flooring to your siding and even the white picket fence, we've got you covered. This is Home Science Show, where we dispel the myths and misconceptions about your home, reading the fine print so you don't have to. Here's your hosts, Chris Linder and Dimitri Lipinski.
Hey, welcome to the Home Science Show today with Dimitri and Chris. And today we have an interesting topic with regards to all the current wildfires in California. But before we jump into that, I wanted to present Dimitri with a little gift. And I'm holding a white paper wrapped package. Dimitri, for those of you who don't know, has become a pretty big fan of Joe Rogan. And Joe Rogan's got a great podcast out there. And one of the things that Rogan talks about a lot lately is that he recently got into elk hunting. And he talks about how much he loves elk meat. So not long ago, I was on a hunt and had shot a mule deer. Now, it's not an elk. However, it's very coveted meat to me and those of us who are in that world of hunting. And I wanted to bring it to Dimitri because he keeps talking about how he wants to try elk meat. Is it any good? Where can I get it? Is it, you know, he's big into his protein. So here you go, my friend. Now, it's not elk, but it is somewhat close. The elk is maybe the highest on the ladder of quality in wild game, but this was from me.
Thanks,
to you,
man.
From South Dakota.
I like the sticker, not for sale, so I cannot resell it?
No, you can't resell it.
It's frozen deer butterfly chops.
Yep, so you're going to want to cook those medium rare at the most. Don't overcook them, you'll ruin them.
Awesome.
Season them just the way you'd season your steaks. Yeah, I know you're a big griller. That's the best way to do it.
Thanks, man. Didn't expect that at all.
You mean didn't expect a frozen package of meat this morning?
No, not at all. Complete surprise. All right, guys, welcome everyone to the show. You're listening to Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. What an opener. Anyway, if you've been following the news lately, one of the most disturbing news you can find is obviously California fires. And to be honest with you, I'm shocked by devastation. Almost seems like we're watching news in somewhere in the third world countries. Because so many people are already dead, so many people are cannot be found. I think I've seen numbers of 300 people are still missing, and everybody's asking this question: why? How did it happen? I mean, California is known for fires, and you would understand somewhere in a third world country if people are missing, or you know, there's bad roads. There's so many factors how it can be so tragic so fast. But now we're talking about California. We're talking about area of internet, developed country with the good roads, and we still cannot prevent all this death. Like, I guess fire beats us, and it's even more than Hurricane Michael. If you look at the numbers, more people already died from fires in California than Hurricane Michael just a month or two ago in Florida. How crazy is that? So it seems to me that we are more prepared to escape from a hurricane, but we're helpless against the fires. Why do you think is that, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know. It's the death toll I see today, as of today, was up to like 56.
Yep.
Over 300 missing. And I think, you know, for us, it's not in our backyard, you know, per se. So it's a little bit hard to even kind of wrap your mind around. You see it on the news all the time. And not that we don't get some wildfires here and there for sure, but to this level is, I don't know, I've never really been around something like this. But I guess I don't really know, you know, why it is that even in today's world that we live in, with all the, you know, measures that we take in our daily society, all the, even if you think about the people who would, for lack of a better way of saying it, want to make money on being able to provide this safety, why isn't that in place? Do you know what I mean? You know, there's,
sure,
there's plenty of people that are driven by money that you would think would have figured out a way to sell the government on, you know, the better safety prevention from this.
Well, I've been always fascinated by fire. Fires always scares me. If you watch the movies, like actually, I think last year Only the Brave came out, and it's based on a true story about California fires. I mean, once you once you see the footage, the stories, and those movies like Letter 49, Only the Brave, they show you the danger of the fire, but they also show you how helpless human beings is in front of them. I mean, it's nature at its worst. When I was little, we lost two houses. At the first house we lost, I was only 5 years old, and second one I was 7 years old, and we lived in a two-story apartment complex, wooden apartment complex. Majority of the buildings in our town were brick and mortar, but few of them still were built out of wood. And I remember, as a seven-year-old boy, we lived in a four-bedroom apartment. Fire started with the second level, and everybody was jumping out of the windows. My mom, everybody escaped, so I was oldest of four at the time, siblings. And my mom, and I don't think my dad was around, but my mom took my twin sisters. They all escaped at the front where all the crowd was. And I picked up two bags of our belongings, clothing, wherever, opened the front door, and I see a huge smoke coming right at me. I shut the door, and I ran into opposite room, and I jump out of the balcony in my underwear and was just scared with the roof collapsing above me. And I remember nurse coming to me and telling me, "Dmitry, are you Dmitry?" I'm like, "Yes, ma'am." And she said, "Your mom is jumping into the fire looking for you." So she grabbed me, came around. I was seven. Until of age of 15, I couldn't wake up at night to use the bathroom. Like, I was peeing in my bed for next 8 years of my life. That's how scared I got that night. Just like standing in front of the building that is on fire. We pretty much lost everything. And it happened twice at that age, like 5 and 7. And I mean, it's scary. It'll stay for you for the rest of your life, probably. I mean, I experienced it firsthand. It's a scary moment. Fire is a very, very scary instant.
Yeah. Again, you're listening to the Home Science Show with Dmitry and Chris. You can find us at homescienceshow.com or find us on YouTube, The Home Science Show. Send us an email if you've got stories on this and regarding fire or any other sort of thing like that. And I hear that, and in my line of work, we deal with fires too. And there's nothing more, I don't know how to say it. You know, we come across a lot of catastrophic type stuff and bad situations, but fires just, I think it's the residue that's left behind, the thought of what occurred, you know, seeing what must have happened and all that sort of thing, that it stays with you, let alone if you, you know, like you said, you were in that or involved in it, it's traumatizing.
Well, if you look at the pictures of California fires right now, I mean, it's inferno. I mean, if you read testimonials, I mean, just being around campfire, your clothing gonna smoke for weeks, and it just stays. I mean, it's a burning hell. That's what it is right now in California. I don't think we're in Minnesota with our freezing cold temperatures right now can even imagine that. But looking at the pictures, looking at the burning cars, looking at people trying to escape and all the smoke, even if you're not in a zone where a fire already consumed somebody, you're still in a smoke zone because it goes for miles. I mean, I have friends who is reporting to me right now saying, "Dmitry, you cannot be around LA right now." I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, you can see it for hundreds of miles, whether you're and the ash is one thing and then the smoke is another thing. How far you can see it away?
Government cannot do anything. Firefighters cannot do anything. I've just heard recently a fire department chief came forward and he said, "Listen, we're in a race and we're already behind it. We're already losing the race."
Yeah. Well, in Minnesota, fires are most common in the winter, so we have to think about that as well. You listen to the Home Science Show with Dmitry and Chris. We come back, we're going to talk about the difference between fire and smoke and how both can have devastating effects in your home. Down, 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 down.
Welcome back to Home Science Show. Today we're talking about devastation of fires. Fires recently have been more dangerous than hurricanes in Florida. They took more lives, and it's not done yet. A lot of people are missing. So we're talking about danger of the fire, and I know a lot of people don't understand it. Fire is not only dangerous because of the fire itself as far as heat goes. Fire comes with the smoke. Chris, can you explain to us what's the biggest problem with the smoke when it comes to science of home, building home? Why is it a really big deal, and what can be done about it? Because I read a lot of articles and people are saying you can build a fireproof home, and I understand that you can build a house where house not gonna burn, but what about smoke? Can you build a smoke-proof home?
Well, I think it's debatable whether or not you can even build a fireproof home, and I know that the there's a lot of experts who are discussing that. And you know what I would say is, even if the home isn't going to burn to the ground, the structure is going to sustain a lot of smoke damage. And the reason it's going to still do that, even if it's fireproof, in my opinion, unless I'm shown different, is that in order for a home to ventilate properly, it has to have intake, you know, an exhaust in a home. And if it has intake and exhaust in a home, you know, it's going to allow for air to come through, which is where the smoke's going to come through if there's a fire, right? So
this house has to be ventilated.
It has to be. And now maybe there's some dampers and things that can come into place, like when it senses a certain heat where it can lock those things off. You know, it would have to be some pretty mechanical situations. You know, I don't know how cost prohibitive that would be. But the point would be that even if the home doesn't burn to the ground, the amount of smoke damage it would take on would be enough that the home essentially, you know, if you talk about a wildfire, right? And so you got a home that's engulfed in flames all the way around, the smoke all the way around it, and say that the structure stands, well, the smoke that's going to get into it is going to be enough to where you're going to have to take this home all the way down to the bare bones in order to bring it back to life to where you can inhabit it again. Because the odor from the smoke, not only the toxicity of smoke at that level, but the odor from it is going to be there essentially forever if you don't properly, you know, get rid of it. So what most people don't realize is smoke, think of it like air. It can go anywhere in your home. And so when you start looking at it, you know, the first thing, of course, is the odor, but also where did that get to and why is it causing the odor? So a lot of times you can clean things off of certain surfaces with special chemicals and clean it down. But if it penetrates the porous materials in your home and it gets behind the nooks and crannies. So one of the first places you would want to look is if you were to pull off the trim around a door. You know, everybody's got a regular door with casing around it. Pull that off, and what you'll be really surprised to see is the smoke that made its way back behind that trim. So if you cleaned all the wall around it and then you pulled that trim off, you're going to see smoke in behind that trim. Now, the problem with that is that that smoke's going to carry that same odor forever, and you're just not going to know it was there. So even though everything else was cleaned, once that
smoke odor never goes away?
No, that sooty smoke odor, if it's there, it's going to stay. And you know, most likely there's going to be a lot more of it than you realize. So think of that's just behind one casing, and it's there. And so typically what activates that is humidity does a really good job of activating that odor. So if you've ever spoken with somebody who lives in a home that had a fire and they say, yeah, we had it all cleaned up, but boy, it just seems like it still smells like smoke. And two things with that. One, if you've ever been in a fire or around a fire, you have a very keen sense of smell towards that. It just shows up on your radar very quick because it triggers the memory of it. But the big thing is that it's just without doing a proper job of cleaning it and inspecting, like behind cabinets. Kitchen cabinets are a big place where smoke is going to get in behind there. So what happens is you have to take all these pieces off. You determine what you do is you go through and you kind of figure out what things can be cleaned, what surfaces can be cleaned, and what surfaces have to be removed. And then the second part of it is how much of it got into like wall cavities, into your studs, things of that nature. So, you know, once you determine what can be cleaned or not or has to be opened up, then what you do is you break it all the way down to your studs. You clean those studs as best you can with specific chemicals, so the boards behind your drywall and such. You clean all that off, And then even taking it further, you have to encapsulate that smoke, that where that smoke was, that soot smoke, and you use a special product that is actually going to actually encapsulate all of those materials so that nothing can get back through it. That's how serious it is, because if you don't, as soon as that product, that porous material, starts to heat up or activate, it pushes things out and emits the odor out of the product, and that's why you start to smell it again.
Is it fair to say that problem with the smoke, it's more psychological than, you know, like integrity of the building materials per se? So like after the damage is done, so let's say you're the contractor and you I mean, I've dealt with a lot of clients where like it was a local fire, like one unit or something caught on fire, could be stove, could be whatever. But is it fair to say that the damage, it's more psychological to human being because you're going to smell it and it's going to remind you of something? Or, I mean, because, you know, obviously smoke, it's not because of the smoke damage, you're not going to have problems with your walls. Your house is not going to collapse. But you don't want to live in a house where it reminds you of a smoke. Like, you don't want to smell anything. And like, what's there? Is it true that it's more, like, why would insurance pay to replace walls or rebuild something, you know, like, if you can't see the damage?
Yeah, if the physical condition is just fine and yep, you can live in it fine. Yeah, I think that basically boils down to, you know, to policy in that you gotta, insurance is responsible for bringing it back to
original condition.
So it didn't come smelling like smoke, right? And this is one of those things where it's a little bit subjective.
How
it's
do you
a
measure?
Bit hard.
How do you measure? So let's say I'm an insurance adjuster. I come out and I say, well, yeah, you have smoke two rooms down the hallway. I don't smell it here. How is there some like method to measure the smoke for the sake of the argument?
Well, I think that it's not really, and that's the problem, is I think that if you get an educated company in there who knows how to clean this up properly, what they're going to do is they're going to follow a system and they're going to follow, you know, logic and what would have happened. And then you have to just go with that, because if you don't, you can get all the way to the end and be like, well, I still smell it. Right. No,
but I know my point is I know how insurance company works, and I know they'll hire an engineer can create a report. That's the biggest problem in the insurance industry. Insurance hires engineer reports, which is a lot of times can be corrupted, and they say, because they work for insurance company, they say, well, no, that room doesn't have no damage, and you, the homeowner, maybe have a baby there and say, no, I smell smoke there. But how can you prove that it can be smelled? I mean, I'm just curious of how do you identify?
Yeah, well, an engineer only comes into place in a fire with structural integrity, and after sure, that, then of course things are going to just have to be within reason, you know. And
exactly,
so that's really what's come out. You don't get a lot of pushback,
and you don't,
and as long as you are explaining yourself well and following a system. So like, when, you know, if you go into an apartment building that one of the units had a huge fire, right? None of the other units were damaged physically by the fire. And typically, as you know, if you've ever had a fire, you know that the smoke does most of the damage. And so you have to try to mitigate further loss in those other units by running specific units to kind of clean the air, because that sooty air that from the unit that burnt, from the apartment that burnt,
sure,
will continue into those. So you run these hydroxyl units that kind of keeps that air clean. It isn't ruining other apartments if it's possible to prevent that.
I know insulation sucks a lot of it too.
It does. Yeah. Anything porous like that, any of those organic materials, a lot of times the intensity of the area that it happened in is what's going to determine how deep you got to go. Because, you know, you want to just try to clean off the drywall, and if you got to take off the trim and clean the trim and those things if you can. But wood is wood, and the backside of it's not sealed on trim, so a lot of times you have to get rid of it. But as long as you follow that path and you've got a contractor who can tell you, or tell the adjuster, hey, no, this has to be done and this is why, and they can show it and prove where this soot traveled, you usually don't get too much kickback on that. It's when you get an inexperienced guy who's, you know, trying to cut a few corners and doesn't really know that you got to take it to a certain level.
What do you think is it going to take in California next? I mean, as far as like you've seen the footage, and it's so dramatic, it's so bad. I can't even imagine living in an area like that. It's inferno. It's a living hell. I feel like it's God's punishing us. Like, I mean, you just can't. It's like there's a lot of theories, like conspiracy theories that, you know, about. I read some crazy one, like about huge megatons, like megawatts, laser beams, because people are saying how can house be burnt and trees around it is not. I mean, there is so many speculations right now why it's happening and why, like, it's almost like somebody needed to happen, but I don't buy it. But what's the next? How are we gonna, like, because it's not the first time it's happening. That's why I'm asking, like what can be done?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they have such devastating drought out there that is the major cause of what's going on. And so then you think, well, you know, how do you prevent that? Well, you're talking a lot of square miles. I mean, it's a big, big, big area. So
it's not even a house. It's more like landscaping and development.
Yeah, but all these forests, all these, you know, areas around are just dry. It's kindling everywhere you look. It almost takes nothing to start it.
It's so hard to imagine. I mean, we're in Minnesota. Obviously, we have trees everywhere. But, I mean, yeah, it's just hard to imagine how fire spreads like that.
I think they need to consider fire breaks. So things can only spread so far before they hit a break. Mm-hmm. You know, like dirt road breaks. But I don't know if that's realistic out there. You listen to The Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. You can find us on YouTube at The Home Science Show. Or email us, info@homescienceshow.com. When we're back, we'll talk a little bit more about fires in your home.
Where there's fire, there's smoke. And if there's smoke, welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. I'm Dimitri, and today we're talking about California fires, and obviously we're going to talk about safety and fires, how to protect our homes. What I want to talk about right now is how often should we be talking to our kids in our households about prevention of fires and also escaping. Some of you might remember a crazy story from 2014 where 5 out of 7 kids died in a fire in Minneapolis apartment. And unfortunately, it happens more often than we want it to happen. Fire statistics are pretty crazy. You remember that building in London where, like, skyscraper got on fire, and I don't know how many people died there. But fire is crazy because fire can kill you even without a fire. Smoke will kill you. And I remember taking my family to Lutzen, Minnesota, and we were staying in a cabin, and carbon monoxide, was going off. We couldn't find it. It was behind the dresser. Ended up calling maintenance guy, and my 10-year-old daughter later wrote a little poem about it. She named him Cordy, and he became like a family pet who protects us at night. And I remember kids are asking. My oldest is 10, so 10 to 3 is the age, so the kids are very small, and we have to explain what the noise is, and now they all know it. But it's sometimes it's so annoying. Like, you hear that beep, and you have to find it, you have to find a battery, you have to replace it, and a lot of times you take it down, and you don't put it right back up, and you think you'll be fine for the next few days, and then what if you forget, and what if at one point the fire starts? You know, it's a crazy, but knowing that it can happen and reading the news how often it happens, I mean, you can't neglect it. So how often should we be talking to our kids about safety and exits and what to do if you smell the smoke? What should you do? You run upstairs, you run downstairs, you run outside? How often do you talk in your household about it?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, the stupid smoke detector battery beeper thing. There may not be a more annoying thing on the planet.
Do you remember episode of Friends when Phoebe destroyed one. It was like making noise, and she took the battery and everything out, and it was already like all disconnected, and it still were making noise.
Yeah, you can't make it shut off no matter what.
Nope, and she just took a hammer and like destroyed it completely. And I told my wife, "This is exactly what I do because I hate that thing."
Yeah. We had one we took down because the same thing, it wouldn't stop beeping, and it wouldn't stop. Like, we have it totally taken off. So we put it between all the towels that are stacked up in the linen closet. So, like, okay, we can't hear it now. So later on, go to bed. The house is completely silent. And you hear, beep, beep. Oh, you're kidding me, that stupid thing. Then you're like, what the heck? Oh, no way. And you have to dig it out. Yeah, I mean, it's like that for a reason, right? But, yeah, I think that in our house, not enough. You know, we should, and I should know better. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it and going, man, I'm terrible about this. Just probably maybe.
I think we all are.
Yeah, maybe like everybody else. And I know better, you know, because we see what happens.
How often do they go off when you're cooking?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other story.
It means that they're working, because every time you burn something in the kitchen, it's like the whole house, because they interconnect, and now it's like a disaster. Your kids start hating you. They plug in their ears. But hey, you know what? When that happens, I actually thank God for those things, because I'm like, well, if this, and sometimes it's like very little smoke. I'm like, oh, it already went off. Good, because if fire breaks in somewhere, I know it actually works.
It doesn't take much. Actually, the home we used to live in didn't have a fan in the bathroom. It's an old home, right?
Sure.
And didn't have the exhaust fan in it. And so the steam from the shower would always set off the fire alarm that was just in the hall, just outside the door. So you'd be in there, you'd take a shower, it's all steamy in there.
Steam is moist.
It'll set it off.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so you open the door from the bathroom, and right in the hall is where that smoke detector, sure enough, that thing will go off. And you're like, I'm just taking a shower. You know, it doesn't. So they're sensitive. I mean, I don't know exactly how they work. I guess I should probably look into that. But no, that'll set it off too. It does not take much.
I just wanted to tell our listeners, if you are cooking and burning stuff and you never hear your smoke alarms go off, I mean, you better check it out. It should be a regular thing for everybody. I mean, something is wrong if you're burning stuff in your house and there's nothing that goes off.
I better check mine. Because if I'm cooking, I'm usually burning something. Yeah, we need to work. Kids like that too. You know, I think that they think that that's cool. They think that that's because they're conditioned at school, meaning they want to know what the plan is. They want
to
know that they have fire
alarms.
Kids want
to be trained.
They want to be trained.
They want to have protocol.
Yep, and so don't feel like the kids aren't going to listen or aren't going to want to do it, because the truth is they're actually already conditioned for it at their schools, and they kind of expect it at home too.
Well, another one too, I would say, talk to them. And with the little kids, it's very easy to build that sense of urgency. It's also a very fun topic. You can, you know, just like for their safety, you know, don't talk to strangers. If you smell the smoke in your house, here's what you have to do. I know we have a basement, and our basement doesn't have exits. So actually, we have this one room. It's a hidden room, like with no escape pretty much. And somebody, I was given a tour of the house recently, and somebody says, well, this is a perfect escape room if you have intruder or something like to hide there. I'm like, no, that's the worst, because it's hidden room. Nobody knows where it is, and you can get killed there and never be found.
I don't want to go to that room.
Yeah, don't go to that room. Go somewhere, you know, where you can like run outside. That's probably the best.
Yeah, it's and the having the actual real plan. And one of the things that I know that we see a lot is, and firemen will tell you this, put a sticker on a door, laminated or whatever, that on bedroom doors, how many kids are sleeping in that room? One boy, one girl, this age, that age. That tells if something, and I know that sounds all crazy to stick something that on your door in your home, but if you make it a little bit fun, there's nothing wrong with it. And you know, that tells somebody when they're coming home who they should be looking for. How many kids are in this house? Because you may not be there and be able to tell them how many kids are in the home and, you know, what's going on and how many adults.
I think all my doors have some kind of like do not come in or knock before you come in, and my 5-year-old cannot write, so she comes to people and asks him, can you please write it? And we would write, like, what do you want to write? And she goes like, well, write that I have a party, please come in. So think about firefighters trying to do. But you know what? You have to talk about it. And one of the best tips that I've seen it somewhere. I don't remember when I read it somewhere on the internet. But the tip was, you know, like in schools, they have escape plan, like what to do. So what this person recommended it, I couldn't find it for the preparation of the show, but what he said is put it on the doors or like on the exit doors with an escape plan, what to do. Like, for example, in your house, it can be going to second level and, you know, it, because if you have two levels, sometimes you cannot go down, right? So whatever the plan is, maybe have a ladder of the window and stuff like that, and then put it on the door. It doesn't have to stay for the rest of lives, but if you put it for like 3 months, everybody will see it so many times that they'll memorize it.
Yeah.
So if your kids keep coming to the front door and they see this exit plan or exit strategy, guess what? It's going to stay in their head even after you remove it, even 2 years later.
It'll be second nature and they'll just do it.
Exactly. So in case of fire, and put in the plan, what do you want your kids to do? Like in case of fire, go to Anastasia room, open the window and, you know, climb down the ladder, right? And guess what? For kids, it's fun. They're gonna stare at it so many times. They're going to make so much fun about it. But when something happens, hopefully they'll do it. And most likely they will.
Again, you're listening to Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. And you can reach us on our website is probably the easiest way. Once you say Dimitri, info@homescienceshow.com, and or find us on YouTube. Watch some of our videos where we have a little bit more info on some of these topics. The escape plan thing is huge, and they make these ladders that kind of hang over the windowsill in your home, and you just keep it right there next to the window where you're going to want to escape from if it's a second story window. So you just basically hang it over the windowsill and throw it out kind of like a rope ladder. And that's something that stays out of the way.
If you go to Amazon has quite a few amazing products. It literally called a 2-story fire escape ladder. It cost $34. If you're watching it on our YouTube channel, link is below. And that ladder is so simple. It's not bulky. It's pretty much, it's a done deal for, I mean, $35, you can't beat that. That's why we all love Amazon for products like that.
Yeah. When in doubt, go to Amazon for your fire safety.
What else do you have? Do you have any more tips for a family with the kids, Chris? Do you think it's smarter to go down in the basement or up when fire starts?
Well, I think you gotta work towards whatever's going to get you out of there. And up is, you know, typically the best way to get, you know, out, I think, unless you have a basement exit that's easy. You know, if the smoke's rising and you can get to the basement, just go right out the basement, get out. Every home is different. As I think what the fireman would tell you is that you have to work with what works best in your home and then obviously depending upon where you're at. So, you know, if you're in this area, go here. If you can't go up, go down. If you're going down, go out this way. You're listening to the Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris, and you can reach us at homescienceshow.com or info@homescienceshow.com. And when we come back, we're going to give you our best tips to keep your family safe when there's a fire at home.
Welcome back, everyone, to Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. Today, we're giving you some helpful tips how to survive a house fire. And I'm going to start with a very simple one. Write down an escape plan. Put it on your doors so your kids can memorize it, can remember it. You don't have to have it for the rest of life. But if you put it for a couple months and it's detailed and detailed for your kids to understand, they will memorize it. They will see it hundreds of times. They'll make fun of it maybe, but they will remember what to do when fire starts, whether it's going upstairs, whether it's getting letters, fire extinguisher, wherever the plan is, you know your house best. Use a common sense logic, do some research, and write it down.
Yeah, I think having a meeting place outside is really important too. If you're going to evacuate the house, have a place that once everybody's out, they meet at one central location away from that, you know, away from the house. And that way you can gather, you know, who you're missing and who you're not.
That's a good one. As a fire survival, when I was 7 years old, we didn't have a meeting place. So I jumped out on the back of the house and everybody was at the front. And my mom ended up jumping in the building looking for me because I wasn't trained. I wasn't taught to go in front of the building. I went to the back of the building. My tip would be practice. Whatever you come up with a plan, like Chris said, if you have designated outside meeting place, practice with it, especially if you have a big family. Like I have five kids. It's one thing to tell them, hey, this is what we're going to do, but you have to practice one or two times. Like say, hey, right now, house is on fire, basement is on fire, run, run, run. And, you know, you don't stop until everybody follows the plan and everybody get together in that place.
Yeah, and I think even if you communicate with neighbors and you have a common place, so if your house has the fire or their house has the fire, they come to your house, you go to their house, and then even in that place have a safety kit, first aid kit, something in case somebody did, you know, get burned or something while you're waiting for help to arrive.
Absolutely. My next tip is install and test your smoke alarms. Obviously, we don't think about those unless we remodel our homes and we have to pass some kind of code. And I have to tell you, the codes are getting better and stricter when it comes to fire safety, because there has been, I think Minnesota actually adopted new code after 2014 fire. And not surprising, but if you live in a house and you know, you've been there for 20 years, you might have very, very outdated system out there. You want to make sure you test it. You want to make sure it will go off every time there's a fire or smoke happening.
Yeah, if it's possible to get a wet towel, wet rag, wet it, wrap it around your face, get low to the ground, and get out of the house. You don't know what you're going to come across, you know, as you're exiting. So if it's possible, if it's realistic, grab it, wet it, get it around your face, get low, and get out of there as quickly as possible.
Yep. Another one is invest in a fire extinguisher. It might sound like extreme, but you'll be surprised how many people never purchased one or don't even think about one. I highly recommend to keep one in your kitchen. I actually remember my wife burned her arm like really, really bad. She was cooking something and oil caught on fire. I have no idea how it happened, but, you know, kitchen probably going to be one of the first sources, potential sources for fire to start. So you want to make sure you have extinguisher somewhere close there.
Most fires, big fires, start out as little fires. And if you have a fire extinguisher, you can get ahead of it and put it out. And that's the reality of it.
And people think about water. Water will help you. Well, water is not always going to help you, especially if you have a gas. You know, like water doesn't go well with the gas.
Oil. You want to keep it away from oil.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you have an oil fire, a grease fire of any sort, the last thing you want is water. You want,
exactly.
You want baking soda or something of that nature on it.
Exactly. Or fire extinguisher. Again, fire extinguisher, that it made for pretty much all different types of fires. And absolutely.
You listen to the Home Science Show with Dimitri and Chris. You can find us on YouTube, the Home Science Show, and you can check out our website, homescienceshow.com. Dimitri, I want to switch a little bit, talk to you about what people don't realize. You know, if they have a home fire and all the contents that they have in their home, they're going to be insured to have their home replaced. But what most people don't really think enough about is all the contents inside. If you went through your home, what it would take to replace every single little tiny item that you have that you've accumulated over time. We didn't buy everything in our home in one day or a few different outings, from every pen, paste, paper, eraser to jewelry. We only think about the big expensive stuff. But The reality is what it would take to replace it all if we had a fire, a full loss fire, is really, really devastating. It's staggering, the dollar amount. So there's some things you can do to help yourself, because insurance companies, they can only replace or compensate you for what they know or what they believe they know, what you can show them. So there's kind of a good, better, best that I would say, that I would tell people as a way to itemize this. And it's a little bit of a list, but this will save you literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, believe it or not, if you have this put together in your home. Because the average home, if you took individually the amount of contents and you had to buy every single thing at brand new replacement cost, it is staggering how much it adds up to. So kind of the best way to do it would be to have a complete itemized list of every single item you have. So literally a spreadsheet of every list. Now, this is ridiculous sounding, but when it comes to what the insurance is going to compensate you for, if you're able to hand them this list, there's not much they can say. So the best lists are going to be completely itemized. And if you have receipts from those items, which, you know, we're probably not going to have for most, that would be great. Keeping it on digital up in the cloud would be the best, so you can scan all those in. But having replacement cost itemization. So in other words, if you've got a book, what's that book cost on Amazon right now, and have that in your spreadsheet. So then you can hand them a total out. Here's how much all my stuff is worth. It's a good exercise. Go through and just do one room in your house. Itemize every single little item in one room. Sure. It'll blow your mind how much money that adds up to. If you sourced on Amazon, how much it costs to replace all that. Take photos of every individual item. That's the best way to do it all. The next best way is just to at least have the list of items and individual photos. So this is still very good. You're not going to necessarily have the replacement cost and everyone, but you can figure that out later. And then what I would call is the basic you need to have would be at least batched photos of everything in your house. So even if you just went room by room and just took a picture of every room, and like if you had a box, think about this. How many of us have boxes in our basement with a whole bunch of stuff that matters? If you were to dump the box out, we call this batching, you dump the box out on the ground and just took a picture of everything. You didn't write down, you didn't take individual pictures. You could, but if you had a look at it, you could kind of go, okay, I had one of these, I had one of those, I had one of these. Do that in every room of your house at minimum and store that in a safe place.
Very good tip. I would also add to it, invest in a fireproof safe. They're not very expensive. And you want to be in a position where fire starts, because you don't know if it's going to be small, big, or how fast it's going to go. We think about fires like, hey, I'll have time to do this. Like, you want to think about potential fire that you don't have time for anything. You have to run outside and let it burn to the ground. That's what I want you to think about fire. And to be safe like that, you can replace a lot of belongings. And Chris gave you a really good tip, you cannot replace like passport or green card, or I mean, you can replace it, but it's way, way harder, like identity items or maybe, you know, like guns, like anything like very, very personal, anything with your identity, maybe like checkbooks and stuff like that. I mean, you can get a lot of things, but if you have titles for the cars, you know, like items like that, put it in a safe and make sure it's fireproof.
Think about it like this. The things that you're going to be required to have in order to start over,
absolutely,
what would they be? If you had to start over tomorrow, what things would you need? You would want a passport, a driver's license, birth certificate. Those things are what's going to, you know, be the most important first to get into that safe. And actually, on a fireproof safe, spend a little time researching those, because there's a lot of them that are technically fireproof, but to what degree, and then how long are they good? How long can the fire last that they're still good for?
Absolutely. And my last tip for today will be about electronics. We've seen a lot of stories already about phones, you know, pretty much blown up, Hoover boards. If you have large and small electronics with the lithium batteries, it can be anything. It can be a blower. It can be your Hoover board. It can be your phone. It can be your cameras. Just don't plug it overnight. We love it for convenience to save time to plug it overnight. Try to avoid that. Plug it and charge it when you actually can monitor and manage it.
Yep. For Dimitri Lipinski, I'm Chris Linder, and we want to hear from you what your issues are, what you might be having with your home, and share any nightmares with us, or if you've been scammed by a company or contractor, let us know. You can contact us on email, info@homescienceshow.com, or even text us, 612-558-4881. Our YouTube channel has been, you know, it's got more content than we can get into our podcasts or radio shows, and subscribe to that, ding the bell for notifications. We'll see you later.